Hello, Digimon fans. Oh, I mean Pokemon fans. You see, what I just did there was something known colloquially as a mistake. Webster's Dictionary defines a mistake as when you mess up. For real, for real. I'm somewhat of an expert in terms of mistakes, seeing that I make at least 23 errors in all my videos, but I always try to make sure to correct them, or at least engagement bait off them in the comments section. Pokemon, on occasion, makes mistakes by creating something that's just absurdly powerful and immediately nerfing it the next generation. Today, I want to take a look at some of these mistakes they've made over the years and figure out if they made the right call by nerfing these Pokemon items or abilities. Look, I know you're craving something that isn't tier list based, considering the past three videos have just been tier slop, but in my defense, I'd stop making them if you all stopped watching, but I really don't want you to. Anyways, leave a like, subscribe, check out the Patreon, become a member. We're going in chronological order here, and I don't really like to talk about Pokemon before Generation 5, because everything prior to Gen 5 isn't actually real, it's just a psyop. There's no such thing as a Cacturne, dude. The gems are something that Pokemon seems to want erased from history entirely, with the exception of the normal gem for some reason. And you know what? I think I'm with them on this one. The gems were a one-time 50% boost to the first move that connected of their corresponding type, with the item being consumed immediately afterwards. This led to things like 165 power acrobatics, 180 power close combat, and of course, 210 power Draco Meteors. Do you see the issue here? You know, before this, if you wanted that kind of power, you'd need to lock into the move with the choice item, or at least set up first. But just straight up ripping a nuke turn one into a neutral target and getting the KO was kind of wacky. And note my wording here, the gem only got used if the move connected. This means that if the move missed or hit into a protect, the gem was still there to rip into the next turn. And you could have multiple of these gems per team. From Gen 6 onwards, gems would be nerfed to be only a 30% boost, but that wouldn't matter as they'd also literally remove every gem from the game with the exception of the normal gem. They did try to revive the concept with Z moves in Generation 7, but there were many more mechanics surrounding these that they weren't as crazy in certain ways. Yes, they could hit through Protect, but this was at the expense of the move having its damage cut significantly. On top of that, you were limited to just one per game, as once you used a Z move, you couldn't click another one even if you had multiple on the team. I'd say they made the right call on this one, especially considering all the wacky mechanics we have today due to power creep. I really don't want to have to think about, like, psychic gem expanding force in terrain with a helping hand. A solid call on Pokemon's part. Since Generation 6, there have been a number of abilities tied to specific Pokemon, which turn their normal type attacks into another type while granting them a boost in power. These abilities are referred to as the 8 abilities, since they're called Pixelate, Aerialate, Refrigerate, and Galvanize. Yeah, we don't really acknowledge Galvanize since it doesn't really fit the pattern, though it does leave open the idea that there's probably a better name for these abilities as a group. And to be fair, Galvanize did come a generation later. These abilities were granted to Pokemon like Sylveon, Aurorus, and various Mega Pokemon, but the two most famous users of them were Mega Salamence and Mega Gardevoir. The abilities granted Mega Gardevoir a 117 base power fairy spread move in Hyper Voice, and Mega Salamence the same boost but as a flying move. Since Mega Salamence was a mixed attacker, it even got access to 132 power return and frustration, and even a 156 power flying type double edge. Bear in mind, these boosts were applied before stab, so when you account for the fact that they get an additional 50% boost from the move since they're the same type as them, you end up with stuff like 175 power hyper voice and, oh, I'm sorry, that has to be a mistake, 234 power double edge. Yeah, there's a reason Mega Salamence was everywhere. That thing was just a demon. Look, I don't care that Mega Pinsir caught a stray from these things getting nerfed, as long as it means I don't have to try to tank a move that strong with my playthrough Linoone. I'm just chill with it. As of Generation 7, all these abilities were nerfed to be just a 1.2 times boost in power, which doesn't seem like much of a nerf, but when you account for the stab bonuses, that's pretty big, with Hyper Voice dropping from 175 power to 162, and Double Edge dropping from 256 to just 216. Still very powerful moves, but now maybe resisting them will actually matter. This channel is partnered with Gamersubs. If you want to support my work and get great tasting drinks, you can order Gamersubs through my link in the description down below or with code MoxieBoosted at checkout for 10% off. Gamersubs is a caffeinated product that I recommend only to my 18 plus viewers, but my link will send you to their caffeine free product section just in case. Every product purchased through my link supports my channel financially, so I'd really appreciate the support. Now back to the video. Mega Kang was not only the poster child of being a broken Pokemon, but also that poster child's mother. Many people will claim that this Pokemon single-handedly ruined the 2015 season, dominating every tournament and making every other team totally unusable. But those people are actually wrong. It only really did that at Worlds, and the other tournaments were actually really diverse. Go ahead and look into it. It's not that hard. That being said, this Pokemon was actually absurdly strong. Upon Mega Evolving, Kangaskhan would gain an extra 30 points in its attack, 20 in both defenses, 10 in speed, and 20 in its special attack for some reason. I guess putting it in HP would just make it kind of busted. But while a fairly modest 125 attack stat for a Mega Pokemon may seem reasonable, the issue was entirely with its ability. Mega Kangaskhan is the only Pokemon to ever hold the ability Parental Bond. This ability causes all of its single target moves to hit twice, with the second hit being 50% of the damage of the first. This means that not only does Kangaskhan have access to an effectively 270 power double edge after stab, but these attacks would bypass focus sashes with the second hit. Even Fake Out did solid damage with it being 90 power after all was said and done. But possibly the most absurd thing they did with this Pokemon was grant it access to the move Power Up Punch. A fairly balanced move on any other Pokemon, with it being a 40 base power fighting move that increased the user's attack stat whenever they used it, but let's run through the logic here of letting Kangaskhan have it. Mega Kang hits twice, so every time it uses Power Up Punch, it's basically clicking an offensive Swords Dance that can chunk Pokemon like Heatran for pretty substantial damage. At that point, it's at +2 attack, so good luck living anything coming from this Pokemon. In Generation 7, Mega Kang not only lost access to Power Up Punch entirely, but Parental Bond was nerfed, so the second hit was only 25% the damage of the first. A really good call, approved by the Council of Moxie, headed by yours truly, who was also the treasurer and the holiday party planning committee. It's kind of crazy that these berries had been in the game for a few generations, only to randomly get a buff that was so busted they had to change it a generation later. The pinch berries were berries which would heal the user for a quarter of their health if they were at a quarter health or lower. When you consider the fact that the citrus berry does the same thing just at half health, you begin to realize that they're just riskier versions of something that already exists. There was basically no reason to use them at all when the citrus berry was just objectively better, so Game Freak tweaked them a bit to reflect their high-risk playstyle. The berries would now heal for 50% of the user's health if they hit a quarter health or less. This, of course, made matches last a lot longer, as now there were multiple berries a team could use to heal their Pokemon for this amount, and Pokemon like Snorlax benefited from this the most, as Snorlax had the ability Gluttony, which meant it would activate berries 50% earlier. So, rather than this berry healing it for half health at a quarter health, Snorlax would eat the berry at half health, bring it back up to full. Combining this with Belly Drum meant that Snorlax would be able to set up to +6 attack, cut its health in half, and then get back up to full before attacking. Because of this, alongside curse sets with Recycle to get the berry back over and over again, Snorlax quickly became a problem in the 2017 and 2018 seasons of VGC. If Snorlax was under Trick Room and set up, the match could end in just a couple of turns, and its incredible bulk made it very difficult to one-shot. These berries would be nerfed to heal for only 30% the next generation to ensure we'd never see Drumlax dominate at the level it had before. But it wouldn't have been possible if it weren't for our next entry. Mimikyu is a Pokemon with fairly underwhelming stats. I mean, most of its stats don't even exceed 100, with the only one being its base 105 special defense. But its strength came entirely from its typing combined with its ability. Mimikyu's signature ability Disguise caused it to not take any damage the first time it was attacked. The attack would simply break the disguise, and from that point on, Mimikyu would take damage like any other Pokemon. It was basically just kind of a shield from the first hit. The fact that Mimikyu was also a ghost type meant that Mimikyu was uniquely able to set up Trick Room as a standalone Pokemon in most matches, since you couldn't one-shot it and you couldn't fake it out. If you wanted to stop the Trick Room, you need to predict its item. If it were Focus Sash, you'd have to taunt it. If it were holding the Mental Herb, you'd need to double into it to KO. Or you could just predict the Trick Room and reverse it with your own Trick Room, but they were just as capable of calling this out and letting you set up the Trick Room for them while they just go for an attack. And this prediction had to be made while there was likely a Snorlax sitting next to the Mimikyu threatening a Belly Drum to sweep the entire team under said Trick Room. Beyond this niche in doubles matches, in singles, Mimikyu basically got a free Swords Dance turn 1, allowing it to spam Play Rough and Shadow Sneak for big damage. Game Freak saw the dominance of Mimilax teams and decided that Mimikyu needed to be nerfed. As of Generation 8, if Mimikyu's disguise was broken, it would take a small set amount of damage to ensure that it could no longer run the Focus Sash item reliably. This made Mimikyu a much more predictable Pokemon, and while it did lose the Focus Sash, it was still very strong. It's not nearly as dominant as it used to be though, so this was a pretty okay call. While terrains weren't nerfed immediately after being introduced, they were nerfed following 3 years of never actually knowing what the battlefield looked like due to a terrain always being active. Like, Generation 7 matches were always green, yellow, pink, or hot pink. I don't know what color the floor was actually supposed to be. And this is due to Gen 7 introducing the Tapus, a set of legendary Pokemon which had abilities that would automatically set up terrain for their teams. These terrains included yellow for energy, green for health, pink for safety, and Hot Pink for kill. Actually, all these terrains work for kill, except for the Misty terrain, which didn't have any offensive benefits. But Grassy, Psychic, and Electric terrain would boost their respective types' moves power by 50%, meaning that all these Pokemon would have absurd damage output. Like, Tapu Koko only had 115 base special attack, and even its Thunderbolts were one-shotting Pokemon if it had the right item equipped. Gen 8 changed terrains to just be a 30% boost in power, which is more than reasonable when you consider how many benefits terrains would give teams. Like, a free choice specs or choice band boost on top of it was just a little too much. Good call. I really don't want to know just how strong Grassy Glide Rillaboom would have been in Gen 8 had they not nerfed the terrains. Yeah, man, a free 50% boost in power was just too much. I'm glad Game Freak realized that. Oh, hey, Zacian. Yeah, in Generation 8, Game Freak made Zacian, a fairy steel-type legendary Pokemon who would get a free boost to its attack when it hit the field. Every single time it hit the field. On top of having 170 base attack stat and 148 speed and really good bulk. Zacian was broken. Zacian was just an outright bad idea from the jump. I have no clue what they were thinking when they made this Pokemon. Like, Fairy and Steel are already a broken type combination, and they just decided that this dude could delete Dynamax Pokemon without ever having to Dynamax itself, or even being able to, since Behemoth Blade would hit for double damage onto Dynamax Pokemon. Was everything in Gen 8 absolutely broken? Yes, so maybe Zacian seemed at home here, but without a doubt, that nerf to its attack stat and making it so the boost only happens once per game was a really good call. Technically, Zamazenta kind of caught a stray here, since it got the same nerf to its abilities and stats, and that was all despite the fact that Zamazenta wasn't very good in Generation 8. But in the end, even that ended up being a smart decision, as Zamazenta went on to be broken after gaining access to Body Press in Generation 9. So just imagine having to play against Zamazenta in Gen 9 while still having that higher defensive stat and getting the boost every single time it hit the field. I really don't want to play that format. You know what was really weird in Generation 8? Calyrex Ice. For some reason, when designing both Calyrex forms, Game Freak inexplicably decided that Calyrex Shadow's broken move would only be 120 base power, while Calyrex Ice could have a 130 base power move. Bear in mind, both of these Pokemon have 165 in their main offensive stat, and while, yes, Calyrex Shadow didn't care about Fake Out or Intimidate, I don't think anyone would have cared if Glacial Lance was also just 120 base power. This one definitely seems like them predicting that Calyrex Ice would dominate the competitive scene in Generation 9, since they only nerfed the move after adding the Clear Amulet to the game. The Clear Amulet being the item that prevents Intimidate from dropping its attack stat. And seeing as that's Calyrex Ice's most common item today, I think they made the right call. While we're here, I should also just note that Urshifu Rapid Strike and Urshifu Single Strike also receive nerfs to their signature moves in Gen 9, but both of these Pokemon are still pretty broken, so I don't really see it as much of a correction. Prior to Regieleki, the fastest Pokemon in the game was Deoxys Speed, a Pokemon which was never VGC legal, and the next fastest Pokemon was Ninjask at 160 base speed, who was never used as the rest of its stats were just awful. But when Regieleki was introduced, speed control kind of just went out the window for certain matchups. Like, what good is Tailwind if Regieleki still outspeeds you and will just slow you down with Electroweb before you can even attack? Regieleki not only brought with it a new level of speed to the game, but an absurd amount of damage due to its ability Transistor. This ability caused Regieleki to gain a 50% boost to whichever attacking stat it was using when it clicked an electric move. This meant that Dynamax Regieleki was able to one-shot even bulky Zacian with Max Lightning before it could even attack. Was it a frail Pokemon? Yes, but not nearly as frail as it should have been considering the speed and power it packed behind it. This Pokemon was able to play support and offense at the same time, with its Electrowebs dealing significant damage to the opposing team. As of Generation 9, Regieleki had its ability nerfed to only grant it a 30% boost in power. But what's strange about this is that Regieleki actually broke precedent. Usually when Pokemon come in pairs, if one gets nerfed, the other one will too. Regidrago was Regieleki's counterpart in the Gen 8 DLC. It too had an ability which granted it the same boost, only to its Dragon moves instead. But Regidrago never saw the same level of play as Regieleki, so when they were both introduced in Generation 9, people were expecting for Regidrago to catch a stray. Only it didn't for some reason. For once, the Pokemon that wasn't the main offender got out without any issue. While some balance decisions in Pokemon may seem strange at the time of release and some Pokemon may be broken, the fact of the matter is Game Freak does pay attention to the competitive scene, and while it may take them a whole generation to rebalance certain Pokemon, they do actually get around to it, which I'm pretty happy with. And I think part of the charm of competitive Pokemon is just how busted certain Pokemon are sometimes, and the way that the competitors end up having to play around them. But what do you think about these changes? Do you think that Game Freak made the right call, or do you wish that some of these Pokemon stayed the same? Let me know in the comment section below. If you enjoyed, be sure to leave a like and subscribe. They mean the world to me. If you want to support me any further, you can check out my Patreon page or become a YouTube channel member by clicking the join button below this video. This gets you sneak peeks at future videos, bonus content, and access to my supporter-only Discord server where you can hang out and team build with other community members. You'll also see your name at the end of all my videos like all these lovely people. Special thanks to my most boosted supporters, Avatar67 and Lilith Lilligant, for the generous pledges. Another way to support me is to check out all the videos on the playlist on screen right now. I know you'll find something in there that you'll enjoy. I also have a second channel where I talk about the current VGC metagame trends, and a Twitch channel where I stream, both of which are in the description. Or you can just tune into my YouTube live streams Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. CST. Thank you all for watching, and I'll see you in the next video. Bye.